All right. Okay, so we've been doing this Life in the Vine series for a number of weeks now, and this is our second to last one. And I usually start off each week with a recap. But then today I thought, why don't you guys recap? What have we been talking about? Yeah, right. Building a trellis. Okay, what's that? A support. And for what? The growing fruit. And what is the fruit? We are. And Jesus said, that we are his disciples if we follow his commands. And what was his command?
Love.
One another. Yes, exactly. And what's that? As I have loved you. Right, exactly. Yeah, both of those. Love one another and love as I have loved you. Those are key things. We don't understand Jesus' love if we don't have those two pieces. And that is really what we've been talking about this whole time. We're talking about how can we bear this fruit, Jesus' fruit. He's the vine, we're the branches. How can we bear this the most effectively in all the different aspects of our lives? One way or another, it is true for all human beings in this lifetime that everything in our lives happens in time. In a different way, it happens in our bodies. Everything happens for relationship, for this love that we are to bear in our lives. And everything happens with treasure. Treasure is what we're going to talk about today, but what do you suppose that is? Okay, things that are important to us, like what? Okay, family. Go ahead.
Time.
So we have talked about those two things as separate items, though. And this is the thing that makes it hard to do this trellis, because everything is actually interrelated. So it is true. We value our relationships. We value our time. What are some other things? Material possessions. Yep. Something else? No. Well, not yet. It is the physical aspect of things. Yes. Good question. So, material resources, any of them, specifically money, but also creation. All of creation is a treasure. And all three of these things are sort of intertwined. You can kind of pick them apart. You can also connect them, and so we're going to talk about them all together. You know the answer to this. This is not a trick question. Whose is it? Whose? God's, right. So it's all God's. One way to think about, we've already said, you know, time is God's, our relationships are God's, our bodies are God's, the church body is God's. Our treasure, the stuff, the physical stuff of our lives, is also God's. A good analogy to talk about how the stuff of our lives is God's is to think about house sitting. How many people have ever in their lives house sat for somebody? Okay, so you know, there's a couple of different ways that you could house sit for somebody. You could go there and you could treat it like it's your house, and if you're a really tidy person, that's great. But you might not be, and you just, you know, kind of let things slide and don't clean. And when I was still single and I was living in the house that I now live in, but it belongs to my parents, I house sat. And for a while during that time, I had a roommate. I'm not the super tidiest person. My roommate was really not. And together, the two of us managed to not take care of the house very well. And every time my parents would come back from Ireland, where they were living at the time, we would do this major crazy cleanup of the house because we hadn't been doing it the whole rest of the time. So that's one way to house sit. But if you are maybe a little more mature than we were, and you are really taking this seriously, this house is someone else's, I'm staying in it, so I'm going to treat everything really well. I'm going to keep it clean. I'm going to try really hard not to break stuff. I'm going to take good care of it. That is the sense in which all of the material world around us is God's. So the way the fruit of love is born through our interaction with treasure demonstrates the extent to which all the other aspects of our lives really belong to Him. So how we treat our physical resources, our money, the creation around us reflects how dedicated our other relationships and our time and everything else is also dedicated. Our bodies, our temples, may be the conduit through which we get addicted to things, through which we idolize other things, but our treasure is typically what we idolize. The things that we can see and touch and spend or get more of, earn, those things we often idolize. And so when we live with those things as if they are really dedicated to God, it's a good indicator that the other parts of our lives are also dedicated to God. So if you still have a notebook for this series, we'll take a couple seconds to listen to Benjamin. And write down on one page three headings: finances, physical resources, and creation. And underneath those, break down what your responsibilities are in those areas. So break down, you know, your financial responsibilities. What bills have to get paid? What are the things that you are financially committed to? When you write down physical resources, what are they? House, clothing, phones, computers, food. There's plenty of other things that I'm sure you could think of. And when it comes to creation, there can actually be two subheadings under that. Resources you use, like water or heat, and resources you cultivate, like your garden or if you have animals. I'll give you a couple seconds just to start these lists. Okay, so today we're really talking about stewardship. And if you've been in the church for any amount of time, any church really, you've probably heard the word before, right? Stewardship. What does it mean? Okay, taking care of financially. Are there any other ways that you could define stewardship? It could be working together. Okay, sharing our talents to benefit God's purposes. Yep. Yes, custodian is a really good word. I think sometimes we get words that we use all the time in the church and then we kind of forget what they mean, or we end up like making them really tiny so they only mean one specific thing, or really they could mean something more. So I would say stewardship is custodianship. It is giving care. Tom, we were going to say something.
Yes. And with that authority comes accountability.
That's great. Okay, we're done. Right. Say the three again.
Authority, responsibility, and accountability.
That's great. Okay, really, seriously, we're pretty much done. That he
did.
A janitor, yep.
Not somebody who's in custody of.
True.
If you're in custody of someone, it's like a guardianship. It's now you get the three pieces that Tom's talking about. You know, if you're thinking of a janitor, well, that's just sweep the floor, which is not a bad thing. That's important.
Right.
When you think of a custodian being not just a janitor, but the
someone who has custody, yes. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is great. I love this because I feel like it makes my job so much easier because you're going to track with what I'm going to say next because you already pretty much said it. So yes, custodianship. We have custody of this good earth that God created and the resources on it. So we have authority, we have responsibility, and we have accountability. And there are two principles, I think, that kind of underlie Christian stewardship, Christian custodianship. The first one is everything is God's, which we already said. And the second is this idea of displaying God's image and God's name through ourselves, but also through the things that we have stewardship of. So in Deuteronomy 12, which David read for us this morning, in verses 1 to 4, it says, "These are the decrees and laws you must be careful to follow in the land that the Lord, the God of your ancestors, has given you to possess as long as you live in the land. Destroy completely all the places on the high mountains, on the hills, and under every spreading tree where the nations you are dispossessing worship their gods. Break down their altars, smash their sacred stones, and burn their Asherah poles in the fire. Cut down the idols of their gods and wipe out their names from these places." Yikes. Right. You can't really literally do that today. Maybe there were some places you could. It's not very politically correct or culturally sensitive, though, is it? No. So I'm just going to acknowledge that right there, but we're not going to go too deep into that. Except to say this about stewardship. So we have this background. You already know this. In Genesis 1:28, God says to the first man and the first woman, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." And after the fall, the command to care for creation is still there. But it's marred. In Genesis 3:17-19, it says, "Cursed is the ground because of you. Through painful toil, you will eat food from it all the days of your life. It will produce thorns and thistles for you, and you will eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your brow, you will eat your food until you return to the ground, since from it you were taken. For dust you are, and to dust you will return." So the first sin, when Eve ate this fruit and Adam ate this fruit, was really an attempt to get out from under God's name that God mentions in Deuteronomy. The serpent says, "You will be like God. You will be in charge." Suddenly, the serpent is tempting the people not to be custodians, not to have authority but under God's authority, but to have it themselves. And it doesn't work, but we've been trying to do it ever since. And this plays out in two different ways. One way is we try to put our own name on the physical treasure around us, on money, on creation, on other resources. And when we do that, there is greed. There's pollution, there's destruction, there's relational strife when we try to put our own name on all these things. Or we try to put ourselves under the name of the resources. We try to submit to it. And so we're ruled by people who are more financially powerful than we are, or we submit to other gods, to pagan gods even, to idols. So there's a distinction. I believe that because of this topic, Christians should have always been and should be now at the forefront of caring for the environment. Because we have not been, now there are movements for the environment, but that puts the environment in authority over people. And that's not how it's supposed to be either. There's a difference between environmentalism and secular environmentalism and creation care. And when we put ourselves under the authority of creation, under the authority of the created order, that doesn't go well either. The people of Canaan were doing this. They had given God's creation away to the authority of the creation itself. So they were worshiping false gods of nature. The gods of nature were intended to be under the authority of the people, but they had given it to them. And what ended up happening was child sacrifice, people taking advantage of each other. This is what happens still now when we try to get out from under God's authority and either be in authority ourselves or put ourselves under the authority of something that is not God. There is a connection between idolatry and treasure because what we treasure is what we will worship. So really, some of you are probably thinking this before when I asked what treasure is. God is our treasure. And when God is our treasure, that shifts the balance of power and allows for the stewardship to happen the way that it should have all along. And this is what God intended, and this is what God's talking about in this kind of weird Deuteronomy passage. He intended to bring his chosen people to Canaan to reinstitute the stewardship that had been lost, that he had always intended for his people to have. And so get rid of the paraphernalia, get rid of the images of the false nature gods, and as he says, wipe out their names from those places. In verse 5, you must not worship the Lord your God in their way, but you are to seek the place the Lord your God will choose from among all of your tribes to put his name there for his dwelling. Everything goes back to God. We go back to the house sitting analogy. If you're house sitting and the people that you're house sitting for have pets and houseplants, you're not doing a good job of stewarding their house if you let the pets take over. That is what we try to do when we abdicate our stewardship under God. After God has put his name on the place he has chosen to be worshipped in the way he alone shall be worshipped, in verse 6 it says, there bring your burnt offerings and sacrifices, your tithes and special gifts, what you have vowed to give and your free will offerings and the firstborn of your herds and flocks. There in the presence of the Lord your God, you and your families shall eat and shall rejoice in everything you have put your hand to, because the Lord your God has blessed you. When we live and believe as if everything is God's, two things are going to happen. We are going to take better care of God's creation. All of it, not just the natural creation, but also the physical resources that we have, also the money that we earn. And we will actually find joy, believe it or not, in giving God what we have earned through our work. We will actually enjoy it. God has put his name on us. Barb talked about this a little bit in conjunction with our responsive reading, and I want to just go there for a minute. When Jesus asks whose face and name are on the coin, the people say Caesar's. Caesar's face and Caesar's name were on the coin. And a lot of people say, oh, Jesus, he was so tricky. He never really gave a straight answer to the questions. And that's why it was such a smart, amazing answer. This is why these people were so amazed. And I think that's probably sort of true. But here's the thing. When people talk about that story, you still get two different interpretations. There are Christians, real Bible-believing, God-loving Christians, who say, on the basis of Jesus' answer right here, we do not have a responsibility to pay taxes because actually Caesar was also made in God's image, and Jesus was just kind of saying, hey, you know, we don't have to do this. Everything is God's. Then there are other Christians, I would probably more likely fall into this camp in case you're wondering, who would say, as Christians, we have a responsibility to support the government, even if we don't always like it or agree with it, to support our country that we're in. We have a responsibility as citizens. We need to do these things. We need to pay our bills. There are other things that we need to give our money to. This is also a way to be dedicated to God. But, as Barb reminded us, besides money, there is something else in the world that has an image stamped into it, and it is us. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. We are imprinted with God's image. And as followers of Jesus, we are living under his name and under his authority. So I'm not saying that this is what Jesus was saying, but you can interpret his answer in that story as something like this. This coin is just money. It has no eternal value. It has Caesar's face on it. It has Caesar's name on it. Go ahead and give it to him. You, though, are God's. You have his image in you, and you do have eternal value, so make sure you are giving yourself to him. When you do, these questions about paying taxes, paying bills, how to spend and save your money will answer themselves because you and your treasure are actually God's, and you think they are, and he will show you how to use them wisely. Amen. He will show you how to live wisely. He will show you how to spend your money. And the best way to demonstrate God's ownership of us and our treasure is by giving with rejoicing to his work. This is so important that God says it twice in this Deuteronomy passage. I don't know if you noticed that. It was a little redundant. In verse 6, which we read, you know, he says, bring your tithes and your sacrifices and your offerings and your free will offerings. And verse 7, he says, and rejoice while you're doing it. And then in verse 11, he says it again. Then to the place the Lord your God will choose as a dwelling for his name, there you are to bring everything I command you, your burnt offerings and sacrifices, your tithes and special gifts, and all the choice possessions you have vowed to the Lord. In verse 12, and there rejoice before the Lord your God, you, your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levites from your towns who have no allotment or inheritance of their own. Notice this. He's not saying the rich people or the men or the self-employed or the bosses or those people, they need to bring those things. No, you, your sons, your daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levites who don't even have their own property. Everybody, bring the things that God has given you and rejoice. That is hard to do unless you trust God. Giving is always an act of trust in God. Always. And it is trust that can only be built as we do it. If you think, well, I don't know. I don't know if I can afford to do this. You're never going to do it. Speaking from experience. It's kind of, anybody here watch Indiana Jones ever? Okay, the third one, The Last Crusade. There's one, all of them, right? Why would you not? There's the scene where he has to go get from here to there, and there is no bridge. And he has to just step out in faith, and then suddenly there is a bridge. That is what giving, Christian giving, is like. You don't know if it's going to work unless you do it. And here's the thing. I'm not talking about prosperity gospel. I'm not saying you plant a seed and then suddenly you're going to be driving a BMW next week. Probably not. Could happen, I guess, but But that's not the point. The point is, when we give in faith, joyfully, God is going to take care of you. And I can tell you this from experience, and I'm not saying this because I think I'm so great. I have never had a job that pays a whole lot, because I just haven't. And there have been times in my life where, especially as a single woman, that has been incredibly difficult. And there have been times in my life where I have said, no, I'm sorry, God, I really don't think I can tithe right now. Until you give me something, I don't think I can tithe right now. And God has been kind of like, right, sorry, no, you need to. And I have stepped out in faith and done it. And I, most of my life, have never had anything extra, but I have always had what I needed. And I know so many people that can share that same experience. But here's one last thing I want to say about this passage that we were looking at today. You might have noticed in both verse 6 and verse 11, he doesn't just say, bring your tithes. There's a whole list of things. And they're not just a whole bunch of different words for tithe. Sorry. There are debates in churches across the country, maybe around the world. I don't know what other churches in other countries talk about, but I am aware of debates about whether or not tithing is something that is for Christians now that we should be talking about. Some people will say no, because tithing is part of the old law, and we're not under the old law anymore, and so we do not need to be legalistic about this. Correct. We do not need to be legalistic about tithing. Here's the thing, though. Everything is God's, and if we are not bound by the law, we should be more dedicated to God, not less. And so I always recommend to start with the tithe. If giving to the Lord's work is challenging for you, or you haven't done it before, this is the place to start. There are all these other things, burnt offerings and sacrifices and special gifts and choice possessions that you have vowed and all that stuff. Just focus on the tithe. So a tithe technically is 10% of your income. If even tithing is scary, that's totally valid. Tell God that you would like to get to the point where you are okay with giving a tithe, but you're not there yet. Just be honest with him. He already knows, so you might as well tell him. Ask him to help you get there, and then ask him where he wants you to start. So we as a congregation have been, for quite a while, somewhat financially challenged ourselves. And it's tough to think about giving outside of our own ministry because we don't have a lot to work with ourselves. And so with prayer and consultation, the deacons and then the admin board have talked about this, and we've said it to you from the front before, that we would like to be eventually at least a tithing church. But we're not there yet. That's okay. And so we're starting with 2%. So we take 2% of our monthly offering that everybody gives in, and we donate it to another ministry outside of us so that we are also participating in God's broader work in the world, not just here. And you can do that as an individual too. Ask God where he wants you to start. Take your notebook, write that commitment in it, but don't just write it down. Actually do it. Just start 1 week at a time, or 1 month at a time, start. So before, and this is how you do it. If you wait until the end of your pay period to put in the amount that you committed to, you will not have it. You won't. But if you, at the beginning of your pay period, you know, commit, okay, God, I said 2%, so 2% of what I'm going to make this week is whatever, take that out, write the check or get the cash or whatever, and put that in the offering, you will have enough for what you need. But it has to come out first. That is what first fruits is in our day and culture. Whatever the amount, be intentional, be consistent. And also, if you don't get it right immediately, automatically, every single week, don't beat yourself up, because we're not under the law. And you're doing this with God. You're doing this in conjunction with God, listening to God's voice. After the tithe thing is kind of more in place or underway, you may hear God or sense God asking you to give to other things. Here's the temptation. I think the church needs this thing, but I'm tithing this, so I'm not going to tithe this month. I'm just going to get them this thing. Sometimes that's legitimate. But offerings and special gifts are something in addition to the tithe. They're not something that happens all the time. They are something that you feel like God is saying, hey, this person needs help, or this ministry needs help, or there's an extra thing that the church needs that maybe you can give to right now. You can make donations. This could be donations of food. This can be donations of supplies or equipment to the church. It could be giving something to friends who are in ministry, giving to individuals in need. You might not get a tax write-off for all of these things. But these are things that God might call you individually to do. Sacrifices, we don't have sacrifices anymore. Jesus was our final sacrifice, so we don't need to offer blood sacrifices like the ancient Hebrews did. But there are ways that we can be self-sacrificial to God. We can, for one thing, acknowledging that all of our resources are God's requires wisdom for all of our other expenditures. So sometimes you might be the type of person that just likes to impulse buy. Maybe your sacrifice is to think and pray a little bit more about what you're going to purchase or what you're spending your money on. Sacrifice could be taking extra care of the environment. Sometimes that costs a little more money to be environmentally conscious. Supporting a local business can be a sacrifice, because local business owners don't have the same perks and built-ins that, say, chain companies have, and so a lot of times they might cost a little bit more, but we are loving our neighbors by doing that. That's a sacrifice. Extra time, volunteering here at church, volunteering and other good things, extra time doing, we're going to start more Bible studies here, you know, going to Bible study. There's lots of different things. So in your chart this week, make your daily, weekly, monthly, quarterly, annually trellis again, and list out your financial commitments, your resource commitments, and your creation commitments. And then as Deuteronomy 12, 13 to 14 says, be careful not to sacrifice your burnt offerings anywhere you please. Offer them only at the place the Lord will choose in one of your tribes, and there observe everything I command you. You are the eternally valuable, eternally loved child of God, made in his image, inscribed with his name. Creating a trellis like this, which we're going to wrap up next week, it is a way of recommitting ourselves to him. It's a way of being really intentional and looking at each aspect of our lives and recommitting to him everything, allowing his name to be on us, reminding ourselves that his name is on us, that his image is in us. Good stewardship of finances, of resources, and of creation around us, even when we are doing it in secret, is the lifestyle choice that will change our characters to be more like Jesus, so that we love better And it will eventually show to a watching world that God is love and God is worthy of our trust and their trust too.